Hi, I'm Ty Tamell, and I'm going off script with DJ Ironic, a British musician, DJ, and rapper with multiple top 10 charting hits.
Right now, I'm thinking someone's trying to kill me rather than rob me, because there's two guys with balaclavas, someone's in a car, knives are here, I'm doing the maths, I'm thinking this is, I'm going to die tonight.
Ironic.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's quite mad to have you here because most of my life from like 17 to 24, I've been listening to your music. I sort of grew up with it. And now you're sat in front of me.
No, I appreciate that. Do you know what? I get that all the time now. I don't know if it's a good thing or it makes me feel older, but a lot of people say that. There was a period of my time in life where I grew up to your music. I'm very grateful that people say that, but it's crazy.
We're the same age, right?
Yeah, we are. We're the same age group, man. 34 now.
As always in the show, just to give people a little bit of background, we go back to the early years.
Yeah.
So if you can just give us a little rundown of like where you were born, how life was early on for you.
Yeah, man. So I was born in North London, grew up in North London all my life. Mm-hmm. Highgate, Muswell Hill, anyone that knows North London will know. And yeah, my upbringing was pretty chilled, pretty relaxed. Never knew my real dad, but I had a stepdad living with us. He pretty much raised me for most of my life. And yeah, when I got to the age of like 12, 13, before that I was into like football, Arsenal, supporting Arsenal, getting into...
Sorry about that.
Doing the usual stuff. Like this was when Arsenal were good, you know what I'm saying? Ian Wright, Burkham.
Were they ever good?
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, so I was into that heavy. Went to Holloway Boys School, which was all boys school. So it was around Arsenal and all that. But I got to like 13, 14 and I went to one of my dad's friend's house. And he was DJing on Dex Techniques them days, 12 tens.
I remember.
Yeah, man, the good days. I said to my dad, what's he doing? Like, what is that he's doing? He said, he's DJing, he's playing music. I never knew what DJing was and I weren't into music like that then. I said, from that day, I said to my dad, can I get a pair of Dex? Like, I want that. I want to try to do that. And then from then, he bought me Dex that Christmas and supported any musical step that I did. Hit my dad and my mum, to be fair to them, from there.
How old were you there?
About 13, 14. That was my first like memory of music. I do remember like my mum was a big raver. So mm-hmm. she used to come in 4 or 5 a.m., you know, raving it up from jungle raves and acid raves them days and like hyperactive, playing music, blaring music every Sunday. So I remember that and that kind of being instilled in my head, like all the garage music, the jungle music, the reggae music. That was my first elements of music. But that day when I saw my stepdad's friend playing on the decks, that was when I first kind of fell in love with the idea of being a DJ and being into music. That was where it started for me, really, man.
What about school?
School, yeah. So
what were you like at school?
So my school days, I was very quiet. I was a very quiet kid, even from early. I was always quite a shy, quiet kid. People never knew I did music until they got to know me. Throughout my whole like secondary school experience, once people knew that I was a DJ or producer, I was into that kind of thing, then they kind of were like, oh, you're so quiet. How do you do DJing in clubs when you're so quiet and little? I was like, this is just what I love to do. So I was pretty quiet, always focused on music, going to my music lessons and couldn't really pay attention in like the serious lessons, like the you know, the ones that were important, English, maths. I couldn't really pay too much attention in them. I just wanted to do creative stuff, drama, music, things like that. So my attention was more into that. And then after school days, to be fair, the school that I went to was a very troubled school. There's a lot of people that were causing trouble, but you know, my mum always taught me to never follow other people. So when they were causing the trouble after school, I'd go home, make sure I go home, make some beats or try to do something creative when I get home and stay away from what all my friends were doing, which was hard because when you're around people, you want to follow what they're doing. Do you know what I'm saying? But my mum always told me not to. So
fair play for not getting caught up in all that.
It was hard, bro. Like, obviously, I'd done the fair maybe one little bad thing or something. Do you know what I mean? Just you get caught up in these things. But I always knew my mum was strict. I can't lie. Like, I remember the first time I swore, she put fairy liquid on my mouth and made me not swear ever again. So she always taught me, listen, never do the wrong thing. And I knew.
Big up to your mum.
Yeah, big up mumsy, man. Yeah. She obviously she had a way of teaching me certain things. And at the time, I probably hated it when I was young, but it makes sense as you get older. Like, she proper made sure I went down the right route. Do you know what I mean? So
for sure.
Yeah. And I knew the consequences, so I didn't even do that.
So effectively, you discovered music that was your way of expressing yourself in those days, right? Because you said 100%. You were really quiet.
But yeah.
So that was the way you were talking to the world, 100%. By creating music.
Yeah. So that was my thing. I think for me, it was like, because I was so quiet, even when I was DJing, not as a producer or artist, I still felt a way of talking to people because I'm making them have some sort of feeling. Do you know what I mean? Or like my sort of way of like, everyone was good at football or someone was good at running or, you know, little things. I weren't really good at sports or anything like that. This was my way of like, look, I can do this. I'm a good DJ. And DJing wasn't a big thing then. It was like, now like there's loads of DJs, but mm-hmm. them days it was like, it was rare to find one or two people that DJ in school. So
how did you get on with being up there on your own as a DJ if you were shy? Because it's quite daunting. Like 100%. When I go into my club and I stand on the stage, everyone's looking at, yeah, it's sort of quite a scary place to be, isn't it, if you're shy?
I don't remember the first club I did, but I will say that my family were a big part of that thing. Do you know what I mean? Because my uncle, Steve Gordon, who owns Twice as Nice, mm-hmm. he kind of pushed me straight in the deep end. So when I was 13, the first tour I went on was the Soul Solid Crew 21 Seconds tour. DJ wow. warming up for them. Yeah. So that was big clubs, you know, Amadeus in Rochester, Watford Destinies. You know what I mean? Some big clubs that they had to put like a crate when I went on the decks because I was so short. So I can look over the decks and look at the crowd. I don't remember the first time, but I just remember it being like a surreal experience. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's like, I think from there, I discovered I can be someone else kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So like when I'm off the decks, I'm James. And then once I step in that booth, I become ironic. It's like putting on my cape kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think that was my way of escaping.
How do you go from effectively being a bedroom DJ, which is kind of how you started?
100%, yeah.
To being ironic. Talk to me about that progression.
That transition.
Yeah. When did you get picked up? Where did you start DJing first at clubs?
Yeah, so like I said, I got a big up Steve Gordon, who kind of first gave me that first push. At no point did he kind of give me a handout or anything like that, but he definitely was instrumental in introducing me to the right people. But he was definitely like making sure I was a good DJ before he put me in that stage of Soul Solid Crew or anything. So I'll be buying my records every week from Pure Groove in Archway, like Pure Groove Records in Archway, and making sure I buy the right records and listening to pirate radio stations every week, listening to Heartless Crew on radio and really studying like DJ Fonty and the DZ, like all the DJs that we look up to today. Do you know what I mean?
Heartless Crew, that reminds me. I used to get the train to Southampton and get the Sidewinder tapes.
The tape packs. Do you remember them? Yeah, of course. I still got them, man. Legendary tape backs.
Yeah, they were
that,
cool.
That was what I was listening to and studying at the time and making sure before I become a DJ, I need to make sure I know how to mix and make sure I know what songs I'm playing and make sure I know how to entertain a crowd, really. And that was it. And there was another DJ at the time, a young DJ called Little Charlie. I got to big him up. He was like hot on the scene at the time. So there was like always talks of like him being in the clubs. And I was like, oh, if he's going to be in the clubs, I need to make sure I can DJ as good as him alongside him. So there was all that going on.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, eventually just got to do the under 18 events when I was like 14, 15 and got better from there. Like, I feel like when I was in the clubs, it was more like my practice hours and just getting warmed up and ready for what was to come. Yeah.
And then you start creating music after that, right?
Yeah.
Rather than DJing other people's.
Yeah.
You get signed?
Not yet, no. So 14, 15, I was DJing, like doing all the clubs, especially in North London at that point. And then I had like a bike accident on my bike. It's not a motorbike, just a
push bike.
Down my road. My mum lives down like a really steep hill. So I had a bike accident and I was stuck at home off school for like 2-3 weeks. I had a really bad accident, chipped my teeth, everything.
Yeah.
And then my mum got me this game called Music 2000, which was like a PlayStation production game. It was like really simple, put the blocks together and make music. And you know, I thought this was fantastic. Like at the time I was like, I've never seen anything like this. I knew about producing, but I never thought that was something I would get into. It was just a gradual step. So my mum brought it home, practiced on it, started messing around on it. I started making a couple beats, thinking I'm sick. I was really into grime at that point as well, because Wiley was on radio, Dizzy Rascal. So the first one I made was a beat called Irony. I remember it till this day. I think I still got it on a tape pack or something. I made a beat called Irony. And I would go to cut my dub plates and my records at a place called Music House in Tottenham. All the big DJs used to go there, Master Steps. Wiley would come through and everyone like Lethal B at that time, Morphire Crew. And one day I saw Wiley there and Master Steps there at that time. my dad introduced us. They were looking at me like, he's the little kid, little DJ,
yeah,
little dreadlocks guy. Like he doesn't know what he's doing. But Master Steps actually took the song that I made on Music 2000 and played it the next week on, I think it was on Choice FM at that time.
Wow.
So that was the first time I was like, wow, like I can be a producer, make beats. Someone's actually paying attention. He played it on radio. I think I've still got him playing it on radio on tape as well. My mom keeps everything. So from there, I was like, this is cool. Like, this is a thing that I can get into producing. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, that's when I started falling in love with making beats from there as well. Yeah, and that was about 15, 16 years old.
15, 16. When did you get signed?
I didn't get signed till later on. So that was like 18, 19. So I started producing. I was working with like the likes of Chipmunk at the time, Black the Ripper, all the North London MCs at that time. Yeah, yeah. Rest in peace, Black the Ripper, Cookie, a lot of the North London MCs. And as I said, with the same way producing, it was gradual, man. Like I was in the background, but I was more like, I wish I could be more in the front like these guys are. And then, yeah, wrote my first song. But a lot of the lyrics at that time were like grime bars, like, I'll do this, I'll do that to you and all that. I wasn't really like that. I was a shy kid. It was from Highgate, do you know what I mean? So I only knew girls. That was my thing. You know what I'm saying? I was a ladies' man at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not a bad thing.
Yeah. So at that time, I was like, all right, let me write a song about girls. That's going to be my thing. I'm not going to do bars about, you know, doing any road stuff. I'm going to do stuff about girls. I wrote my first song and put it on MySpace. And from there, the next step was, yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's a blast from the past.
Yeah. And MySpace was a big instrumental part of what I was doing at that point.
Yeah.
MSN and all that, yeah.
Where did you get the name Myronic from?
My mom's got a different story, but this is how my story goes.
Which is the real story?
My mom's got all different stories than me. I don't know how this happens, but she always looks at my interviews. She's like, that's not how it happened. This is how it happened in my head, yeah. I think that, because I remember I had it from when I was 13, so it was a long time ago. But a lot of my friends in school had nicknames, like these cool names. One was called Speedy.
He
used Run Fast. One was called Younger, Biker, whatever. You know, I don't know. I wasn't good at anything, so I didn't have any cool name. But I was like, I'm a DJ. I can produce whatever. I was like, it's ironic that I can do these things at such a young age. That was my thing at that point. But anyway, I looked through the dictionary, found the name Ironic, changed the C to a K, and then, yeah, rest was history.
Got a bit of meaning with it then.
Yeah, a bit of meaning to it, yeah. Not just a random name, but yeah, man, I've stuck with it ever since. So
you start producing, you then create your own music.
Mm-hmm.
You then, I believe at the age of 20, get signed to...
Yeah.
Warner. You're obviously getting famous now, right? You're getting known.
Yeah, so it was weird. So I got signed around like 19 going on to 20, but I was still in college at that time. I was studying music at the Royal Academy of Music in Bromley by Bow. And again, same way I was quiet in school, I was very quiet in college. So I would go to college, hood up, sit at the back of the
headphones
room.
Headphones on,
study, leave. Then once someone found out and put two and two together that I was that same person on Channel U, the rest was history. Everyone was like, how are you so quiet and you're on TV and you're famous? But this was like just on the cusp of me becoming famous. And then you could see the gradual change of everyone treating me different from the quiet kid to now everyone wants to make beats with me in college. And I was like, you know, this is getting crazy. So I had to stop going to college for a bit. And then things were getting busy musically. Labels were interested, having to go to meetings and stuff like that. So I was trying to balance finishing college and signing a record deal at that time.
Channel U, by the way.
Yeah.
I used to come in from school every day and put that on.
Put that on. Blast from the past.
Good memories, yeah.
Now that was another big part of what I've done, man. I got a big up cat, Darren, at Channel U. Rest in peace. You know, if it weren't for Channel U, I don't think I would be where I am today, because putting out my first video on there made a big impact in what we're doing, man, especially even in the whole UK scene in general.
They did a lot, didn't they?
Yeah, channel. Just giving everyone a chance, because all you had to do was send in your video to them, and obviously you have to pay a fee, but they'll put it on if it does well every day, nonstop. You know what I mean? And people were requesting it from the first song I put out, So Nice. Everyone was requesting.
Yeah, I remember that track.
Yeah, man. So, that video cost me £100 to make.
Really?
Yeah. And it's probably one of my most important videos that I've done. But it was a few uni students that I got in contact with. We did the video in about a few hours, shot it in my nan's house in a field. Put it on Channel U and the rest was history.
Love it. Did you ever struggle with that fame?
A I did, man. I did.
In your head, like, did it?
Yeah. Do you know, I didn't struggle with it at first. I loved it. This was what I always wanted. You know, I would watch YouTube clips of, like, Chris Brown and, like, Bow Wow and making the girls go crazy in America and think, this is what I want one day. I want to be one of them, like, real superstar. We never had that in the UK. That's what I wanted. And I liked it. I enjoyed it at the start. It was lovely. You know, everyone going crazy. The girls were going crazy. And, you know, you're young. You want that. That's what you want, the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get hate with it, though. You know what I'm saying?
The trolls.
The trolls. And this was before you could troll on social media. So this was like...
physically.
Yeah. You go to a club and you'll see... Do you know what I mean? Which was a bit more difficult and hard for me to take because I'm like a genuinely nice-hearted person. I didn't expect hate to come with it. But when you get a load of women and you're at the top of the scene and, you know, things are bubbling, you're going to get that with it. And I didn't think about that side of things and that side of fame. And then newspaper reports and girls selling stories and all this stuff that trickles down from fame. I didn't think about that. I only thought about the good side. So that was when it started getting difficult. But that weren't until like 2-3 years into like fame. And also when the music slows down, as in like musically, you're not at the top of it anymore, which happens to everyone, but you're still famous. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of hard for me to gauge in my head that I'm not the biggest artist in the country.
But you're still known.
People still know who I am. So that comes with people trolling you, saying, where have you been? Like, you fell off. Do you know what I mean? It comes with a lot of different kind of things at that point, I think.
Where are you at now in your head with all of that?
Now,
because obviously we're a lot older now. I mean,
100%.
Decade has gone by.
Bro, much more relaxed, much more easy with not having fame. Because obviously, I would say that I'm not as famous now as I was when I first came out. So it's nicer. Me and my fiance, we go out. She's
don't get bothered.
Bro, it's lovely. Like, she thinks I'm weird because we'll go to to the zoo or something. And I'm just looking around, staring. I love this. Like, she's like, have you never been to the zoo? I'm like, I never got the chance because throughout my whole teen and childhood, you know, me and my mum would walk to the shops and there's people on the buses looking down, like banging on the ironic dude, everywhere we went. Like, it was crazy for a time.
Must have been mad at that age.
Mad. And we never had it in the UK. And there was no social media. So when people see you, they haven't seen ironic since TV. Like, it was weird for them to, like, girls crying, girls screaming, tattooed people have got my lyrics tattooed on them. It was a crazy time.
I feel like in those days, the fame, you were more special because you were only ever seen on television, you and every artist, mm-hmm. or on the street.
Exactly.
Whereas now, I feel like where we can watch everyone's lives constantly, you feel like you know them, yeah. It takes away that sort of like starstruck element.
Yeah, no, 100%.
That you would have had in the old days.
Yeah, that is exactly what it was. People only ever saw you on Channel U or MTV, whatever. So when they saw me, they were like, what are you doing around here?
You were like inaccessible, weren't you?
Yeah.
You're on the television.
Bro, 100%. And that's how I felt with some of my icons like Dizzy Rascal, Kano. I still never see them out and about. They're still not as accessible. And I like that about them. Do you know what I mean? Whereas now, the new generation, you can go on their story. I see it. He's in Bournemouth. I'll go Bournemouth.
Go and find him. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? But
about the party scene? Did you ever get caught up in any of that? Drink, drugs, partying?
Not drugs, but drink. Do you know what? Drinking's a weird one because it feels like it's acceptable mm-hmm. to be drinking every weekend heavily in my industry. And probably at that time, I remember
Britain as a whole, I think.
Yeah. 100%. It's like a thing to go out every weekend. Mm-hmm. But with me, it was even different because I would wake up, you know, especially when I was like 22, into peak fame. 22, 23, waking up, telling my boy, let's pop a bottle of champagne, man. Why not? Top of the charts. Pop that champagne, 10 a.m. Do you know what
really?
I mean?
That early?
That's how it was going on. And I'm thinking that's acceptable. Obviously, you got to have fun, but there's limits to it. Do you know what I mean? I think there was times where I was going a bit heavy with it, I think, personally. And my mum will probably agree. And that comes with a lot of different things. Spending a lot more money than you want to. Making a lot more silly decisions when you're drinking that much and you're fueled with alcohol. Like, I think I was kind of caught up in the alcohol thing a bit.
Creeps up on you though.
Yeah.
Creeps up on you that.
I never depended on it, but I think I was kind of, like, I remember, for example, I always used to think I needed a drink to do a show or to perform or to DJ.
To calm yourself a bit?
Yeah. But I'm saying, like, I used to have like a bottle of wine before I go on stage.
Wow. Okay.
See what I'm saying?
So you're.
Yeah. That I feel like that was a bit when I was getting a bit too crazy with it. Obviously things have changed now, but, and then I had one show where it was like, I think I'd done at Buckingham Palace performing for the Queen. Mm-hmm. I was saying to my mum, I brought my mum to the show. I was like, mum, like, how am I going to do this? There's no drink. We're not allowed to drink before you go on stage in front of the Queen. I said to my mum, how am I going to, she was like, James, like, you can do this. Just keep your head down. Focused, it's what you're made to do. You don't need a drink to do this. I was like, proper nervous. But then I realized, I was like, nerves are good. Like, nerves are, is a good feeling. Like, there's no harm in being nervous before you go on stage. And I actually felt better. I didn't have a drink. I killed the show. My mind was more on point. And from there, I was like, I don't need a drink before I go on stage. Everything's fine.
That, those nerves, I feel like sometimes are a bit of a privilege.
100%.
Because if you're nervous or if you're feeling pressure,
yeah,
people are expecting stuff from you.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a good thing.
It's good because like. Then you do your best. Mm. But I got to a point where I forgot about having them feelings. I was like, drink. I'm cool now. I'm numb. Ready now. Yeah, numb.
Yeah.
Which I think was a tiny bit going off the rails. Yeah.
Mad. Yeah. What was it like? Did you meet the Queen?
Yeah, I met the Queen. Yeah.
What was that like?
It was cool, man. She's short.
Shorter than you?
Yeah, shorter than me. She was mad. She was up now. Do you know what? She was really nice, really sweet. She said the performance was great. And yeah, it's just really nice. Really
amazing
surreal
experience.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, it's a real experience. I met Prince Charles as well. So yeah, that was a good time bringing my mum to see. That was amazing as well. So,
I bet.
Yeah.
Let's talk about 2008.
Yeah.
Because that's the year that I feel like it all went massive for you.
Mm.
With that track, Stay With Me.
Yeah. Can't get away from that song.
It's so good. It's so good.
Thank you, man.
I got some great memories of that song and that whole album, in fact.
Yeah, no, thank you.
What? How did that song come about? What's the inspiration behind it?
So that year was a heavy year of knife crime in the UK. Mm-hmm. And my sister was really young at the time. I just wanted to write a message for my little sister to say everything will be okay. Try to stay away from everything that's going on. She went to a school around the kind of area, same kind of areas as me, where it was a bit rough, you know what I mean? So just trying to give her a message and the younger generation to stay away from that kind of thing. Yeah, so, you know, when Alex, the producer of Spark, sent it to me, I was like, I need to write something that's meaningful and that people can feel, and a message. But I didn't know it was going to touch people up until this day. You know, that song was played at funerals. People still say to me now, like, that song was played at my friend's funeral a few weeks ago. You know,
I mean, hasn't Ardy just done a mix
Ardy
of it?
Ardy just sampled it. You know what's good? This year, Ardy sampled it. Dino done a version that didn't come out. Lowski done a version that didn't come out. This year, everyone was trying to sample it, but Ardy got the final one. But yeah, just to know that that song still does kind of mean something, it was crazy.
Yeah, man. It must be good, right? Modern artists are still using that track.
It's mad, man. And like, you know, I just didn't think it will still be a song that people care about. Flipping, how long has it been? 13, 14 years later.
Wow.
14 years later, yeah. But that, you know, that was the song that got me signed. So we made that song, wrote the lyrics, recorded it in my bedroom, my home studio. And same directors that done the So Nice video, done this video. Mm-hmm. Budget video, £100, park near my mum's, done. Put it on Channel U. 2 weeks later, it was blowing up on Channel U, number one everywhere on Channel U for weeks. And then the phone rings. My mum answers the phone. I hear her talking to someone. She's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll come back to you. She puts it down. She said, James, Atlantic Records have just called. They want to have a meeting with you this week. I said,
wow.
Like, you know, UK artists weren't getting signed like that at this point. So yeah. I was thinking, Atlantic Records are the same people that signed T.I., Diddy, like Chris Brown.
Huge.
Like, all the American artists that I look up to, I'm thinking, it's someone, mum, come on, someone's messing around. Yeah. So I didn't believe her. And so she was like, they want to meet us this week. So we'll go Kensington High Street. We'll go meet them. I didn't believe her until we walked in the building and I saw the Atlantic Records sign, the Warner Records sign. I swear I would have cried. I said, like, we made it now. We're in the big building. You know, loads of men in suits telling me they want to meet and talking about all these figures. And yeah, from that day, my life changed, man. They knew what they were doing with me and where they wanted me to go from there. So,
sounds like your mum's been quite a pinnacle, person in your life and career.
Well, I got to big up my mum because she always knew where I was going to be. She even says that till today, and what I was going to be and what I was going to do, and always supported it. Do you know what I mean? Anything I wanted to do musically, she was up for it. Financially, funding. And just always had my back. She would come with me to every meeting. from when I was 13, she put money into buying records for me. You know what I mean? She just always supported anything I wanted to do. Up until today, she'll support anything.
I love that.
What I'm saying? So I got to big up Mumsy because she's always been there. And she was managing me for the whole time. She made sure we got the right deal with the label and done the right moves and the right things were said in the meetings. And, you know, she learned a lot at the same time because she never was in the music business at that time. So
sounds like an amazing woman.
Yeah, no, 100%. So
is that when the No Point Wasting Tears album comes out? You signed 2009.
2009. So we signed the deal for the single. Mm-hmm. The single went well, killed it. It was top five, went up to number five. And then we signed the deal for the album. But there was pressure because they were like, we got out the single. We need to make sure we put out this album ASAP. And I'm like, I had a load of music there, but a lot of it had samples. So we had like Beyonce samples and all these samples. So we had to remake everything.
So that album you made in quite short time?
In about a month and a half.
Wow. 2 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Big album.
Yeah. A classic, man.
Big album.
Yeah. So we was like, I was in studio sessions like almost every day, different producers working on different songs. And then we had all the album wrapped up. And then my A&R at the time, Matthew Chalk, he came to me and said, we need one main single. We just had a top five. We need another hit to lead the album. I was like, cool. How do I make another hit? Because I just made that song in my bedroom.
Yeah,
I don't know the formula to make hits. He was like, cool, I got you. And then he came with the Elton John sample.
Tiny Dancer.
Yeah. He said, listen, this is the one we're going to go with. And then I was, you know, honestly, like I said, I come from grime and garage. I knew Elton John, but I didn't know his music.
It's quite
like
a different.
It's a left turn for me. But like I said, I feel like the label knew the direction they wanted me to go, and they wanted me to be this superstar of the UK rap. Do you know what I mean? So he said, trust me, it will work. We done the song, recorded it.
That did really well, that song, didn't it?
Top three, yeah, number three. It should have been one, but I think Gaga or someone was in front.
It's fair enough, isn't
it? Yeah, fair enough. And then, but we done the song and I said, we need someone on here from the streets who I've been working with, who's up and coming, who gives it a bit of credibility because the song's very commercial.
Hmm.
And then that's when I got in touch with Chipmunk, said to him, bro, can you do a verse on this? And then he came that same night, put a verse down, and yeah, that was the single.
I think Chip is probably one of the most underrated artists for me.
Do you reckon?
I really rate Chip.
I rate him highly. He's one of my favourite. But do you reckon he's underrated?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
When I speak to the general public on the street,
his
name doesn't crop up as much as I feel it should when they're talking about like a top five, top 10 from the UK scene.
Yeah, he should be in every conversation.
I think he should be.
100%.
Every time he delivers.
I think you are right. I think maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe he's done so much for the scene. And this happens a lot. I think even myself, bro, I think people struggle to give you your flowers when you've done so much. So I think it comes when maybe, you know, God forbid, when he's gone,
he
will get that respect and that flower, them flowers.
Sad that it's like that, but
you know, it happens.
You were quite tight with him in those days.
Yeah,
still close.
Still close. We just done a tour. I just done his tour with him. We just done Birmingham, Manchester, London, and we're doing We Are Festival on Saturday. So he's still doing his thing. Obviously, he's more into the grime stuff at the moment. He's working on a new project, which is sounding good. And we're still close, man. Like, honestly, he's someone I grew up working with. And to see where he's come to now, I just respect him so much, man. He's one of my favorites, 100%. And he's always looked out for me. Like I said, I asked him to jump on that tune and he done that straight away.
Hearing you speak about your mum makes sense, actually. There's a track on the album called Mum.
Now that you can hear what I'm saying, every lyric makes sense in there.
Yeah. I've got some mad memories of that album.
Is it?
Yeah. Like, there was a track called I Love You, I believe.
With Digger, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like all the lads used to listen to it and pretend they're singing those lyrics to their ex-girlfriends. Some good times.
But you know what? A lot of the songs on there are like that. There's one song for every person to relate to, whether it's like talking about your mum or your relationship with your mum or that song. Or Stay With Me. Do you know what I mean? There's certain points where someone can relate to a song on that album.
I feel like you tapped into people's emotion really well in that album without using any road.
Yeah.
Which is quite unusual.
Yeah, at that time, yeah.
It's quite unusual.
Yeah. Do you know what it was? Like I said, they kind of rushed me to do the album. I still feel like that album was a bit rushed when I listen to it now.
Well, even though people love it.
But I think at the time I was just had so much to let out because I was just a young, shy kid. Everything, every way I felt, I just put down in the songs. You know, the letter to my mom and...
It's heartfelt, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was just really just a 19-year-old kid writing about how he felt, and that was it. Do you know what I mean? And that's why I think people could relate to it at that time.
when you're creating music, is there somewhere you go or something you do to try and get creative? Because I can imagine if I said to you now, write me a verse, it's probably really hard for it to...
Yeah, it'll be hard for me at this point as well.
Was there something you used to do in those days? Would you go and, I don't know, go for a walk or go and see your friends or do something that would help?
Nothing like that. For me, it was more, I just like to be in my bedroom. So that was the base. Like, even like I said, when they were putting me in these big fancy studios, I couldn't vibe. I had to be in my home studio, and I don't really like recording in front of people. Like, up until now, people probably hardly see me record. I like to record in my house like this, a mic in front of me, just me and the mic, and just zone out.
So it's like your internal feelings you'd let out.
Just let out, yeah. I can't see how, like, I don't know how artists can record in a room full of 10, 15 people.
Like you see on the music videos and in the studio.
Yeah, Chris Brown.
I think I'd be shy.
Do you know what I mean? Also, like, it's a very vulnerable place for me because I'm letting a lot out. So I don't know how I can do that in front of a load of people drinking alcohol and girls and, you know what I mean?
Any new music in the pipeline?
Yeah. So I got some new music coming. I got an EP I've just finished. I produced it, writ most of it. That's coming out end of this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got a full another EP that I've just produced featuring a load of UK artists coming out at the end of the year. So I'm going back to my production stuff and
wicked
more producing and DJing. Yeah. I think that's what I'm going to be doing more moving forward, just DJing a lot and producing more.
What do you think about the music scene now compared to when you got involved? What do you think's changed, or what do you think's got better or got worse?
I think it's got better. Because, actually, let me think about that. That's a good question.
Let me put it in a different way.
Yeah.
Think about the culture within the music.
Mm.
Think about the violence. Think about the stigma. Think about all the stuff we hear thrown around.
But, you know, that was there.
That's what I'm saying. So do you feel that was always there? It's just come into light because of social media or, you know, the technology's changed. People can report stuff more. Or do you think it's getting worse?
I think obviously the scene's become bigger and more mainstream. So, you know,
it's more in the limelight.
More in the limelight. Whereas back in the day when people were talking about violence, you could only hear about it on pirate radio or, you know, underground. It was more underground. Whereas now it's become more mainstream, talking about violence or, you know, but that kind of them lyrics. Like I said, when I first came out, that was all I heard. You know, I'll do this, I'll do that to you, which is why I tried to go the left way.
Yeah.
And thank God now there's still artists that are doing other stuff rather than talking about violence. You got a balance, do you know what I mean, of artists. I just think it's more bigger now. You know, when I came out, there was 4 or 5 main artists, me, Chipmunk, Tinchy, N-Dubs.
Tinchy, wow.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas now there's 100 artists. I could probably name 30, 40 artists. So it definitely has come more oversaturated, I think now, personally, right now, because you're not your own unique identity. You're just another one of the artists that are out. Unless you're the Stormzy, Jay Huss, Dave, the 3 Golden Childs, you know what I mean? Unless you're one of them, you're kind of another, you know what I mean? Even though you've got your tiers of artists, I do think it's oversaturated, but I do like where it is, man. Like, for me, it's always been my dream to see UK music, whether it was rap or MCing, at the top of UK music. You know, before I came out, it was just Soul Solid Crew or Kano, and then me coming through, breaking down them doors and barriers of chart success and mainstream UK rap, and then Chipmunk doing the same.
And Wiley did quite a bit for the scene.
Wiley, of course, big up Wiley doing exactly that. And then Stormzy seeing him headline Glastonbury.
That was mad.
And to them, take it, you know, it's Dave headlining every festival. Bro, for me, it's like I've grown up watching this, and to see where it's got to now, I could get emotional. Do you know what I mean? Like, I love where it's got to, man. And I'm just happy that I was able to be a part of it. Do you know what I'm saying?
It kind of goes around in cycles, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As a club owner, a promoter myself.
You've probably seen it all.
It's mad. So like, I don't know, 5 years ago, the house scene gets massive and all the different crowds and cultures are at house events.
Yeah.
Then it comes back around. Then the garage gets big again. Then sort of like the hip hop grime scene. Yeah. I feel like at the moment, the scene is the biggest it's ever been.
100%.
For me in my lifetime.
Yeah.
The biggest has ever
from
been.
From what you've seen, yeah.
Yeah, like all walks of life, everyone's listening to it.
Yeah.
It's not no longer like a cultural niche thing of certain parts of the country. It's now everyone and anyone.
Yeah, and that was the goal, man. That's what I love to see, man. Like, it's come a long way. It's definitely come a long way. We definitely got some filtering out to do, you know, whether it's, you know, I don't know, toning down some of the violence or, you know, I don't know, just kind of breaking it down a bit more so, you know, people can listen to it from, you know, my grandma can listen to it or whatever. But definitely, it's definitely good.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because there's a lot of talk about the lyrics enticing people to act a certain way.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, these people, generally speaking, are talking about their own experiences.
Exactly.
So you were talking about your experiences in your music, and these people are talking about their experiences.
So you can't really judge them from it.
Not really. Yeah. It's no different if you were reading their book.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, would you read someone's book and then go out and commit what they've said they've done in a book?
And there's plenty of, you know, ex-mob bosses or gangsters that have written their books and they're breaking down every part of what they did.
And how to do it.
Yeah, and how to do it. So I don't think it's much different. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is when the kids want to dress like them and they start wanting to become that character. But maybe that happens even with people reading mob boss books.
Yeah, I guess
so. You know what I mean?
I've just noticed this year, probably last year when we did Sandfest and some events, and then ranging into this year, the fashion in that scene has gone quite dark.
Yeah.
Like people are wearing balaclavas now.
It's part of fashion
in
now.
Daylight, and it's part of fashion. You know, that's always been normally linked to crime.
Yeah.
To be unrecognized, to do
something. I saw a bus driver with a balaclava on the other day. It was going nuts. it's definitely, but you know, even that was part of growing up in grime. Like there was like a uniform, like that, tracksuits and hoodies up. You know what I'm saying? I dressed like that when I was younger. It's still part of culture. Do you know what I mean? Dress like your favorite artist. I always wanted to dress like Dizzy Rascal in the corner.
What a legend,
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's part of the culture still at the same time. So I do understand where it comes from, but yeah, man. I'm not one to really talk on lyrics because a big part of what I do is like lyrics and people relating to them. Do you know what I'm saying?
Of course. So, that's music as a whole, right? How it makes you feel. Taking you back to like the memories you had when you listened to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So powerful.
Yeah, 100%, man.
I want to talk about an incident that happened to you.
Yeah.
Back in 2010. I believe you were on your way home from a gig and was attacked by a couple of men.
Yeah.
Can you explain that? Yeah, man.
Yeah, so that was 2010. This goes back to the part I was saying about the bad part of fame, because I was going through a time at that point where I kind of felt like the world was against me.
Mm-hmm.
Career was slowing down. You know, things were going a bit quiet for me. I had a single out at the time, I think, Falling in Love, but it didn't hit the top 40, but it went top 10. You know, when you're going from top fives to top 40, it's quite a decline. Even though it's still top 40, it was like, So I was back in the clubs, doing the club circuit, but I felt a negative energy around me. I don't know why at that point. I felt like something was going to happen at that time. I don't know why. I remember seeing people at some of my mom's house, you know, some boys.
But you didn't recognize?
This was like a month before, just thinking like, who's this person? But maybe I think this was just paranoia, negative energy around me. And kind of, I think I might have bought it on myself, maybe just feeling that.
Was your circle different then?
Yeah, my circle was different.
You started?
A bit different. Yeah, there's a few new people. Mm-hmm. So the new people were cool, but they were even bringing some sort of negative energy around me as well. So when we would go out, we'll get into trouble. He would fight with that person. Do you know what I mean? Over little things. But I just felt a negative energy around me when I was going to shows. So I was very, like a very dark time. And then this particular show I went to, I just remember it being in, it was at Southend, I think. Somewhere like that. And I was tired, really tired. I was like, I just want to do the show, get home. Did the show, and we were on our way back from the show in the tour bus. And I just felt really tired, but I felt like something bad was going to happen. One person was on his phone, just acting a bit weird. Don't know what he was doing on his phone. But
what person was on your tour bus?
Yeah, allegedly. It was all a setup kind of thing. So I don't want to go too much into it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so, you know, someone was on their phone. From there, I was thinking that was weird. It was like 4 a.m., but... And then we get to my road now, my mom's road, and then we get down to the hill, the tour bus pulls up, I get out of the van, and then this was like Halloween times, so two people run up to me, balaclavas, masks on, whatever, but I kind of thought it was a Halloween prank or something. It was just like someone messing around, so I kind of laughed, then he kind of like punched me or barged me, and then I thought, okay, one of my friends wouldn't do that, so then everyone started running, like all my friends started running, tour driver ran off, then I ran because I was like, okay, this must be real, everyone's run. So I'm running from these people. I'm still not thinking this is crazy, I'm just thinking, I don't know what I'm thinking, yeah, adrenaline just kicked in. So I'm just running And then I kind of feel a push. I get pushed down. And then he's like, give me your ring. Where's your ring? Whatever. So I kind of throw my ring away from me.
Yep.
So he has to get off me, go get it. But by this time, I think he's already stabbed me. When he pushed me, he stabbed me in my the back of my leg. But I did it. I just felt like a push down. So I fell to the ground, whatever. So I threw the ring. He's gone and got it, whatever. So I ran back down the hill. But when I ran back down, there's a car coming towards me, trying to block me in. So there's a car involved in it as well, trying to block me in down the road. Wow. So I'm trying to run around the car. There's so much going on at this point. I'm just thinking, right now I'm thinking someone's trying to kill me rather than rob me. Because there's two guys with balaclavas, someone's in a car, knives are here. I'm doing the maths. I'm thinking I'm going to die tonight probably. So I keep running, trying to run. So I run to my mum's neighbor's house, knocking on her door, buzzing them. They let me in, I run in. I said, someone's trying to kill me. They haven't hurt me. I didn't know I got stabbed at this point. She's like, James, are you okay? You sure you're okay? I'm like, yeah, I think I am. And then like she's like, look, you're bleeding. So I look down on the floor, there's blood everywhere. So I'm like, oh, that was when I panicked, started throwing up and kind of almost fainted. Then my mum runs down from her house, screaming, going crazy, running outside, looking for whoever that outside, but they're all gone now at this time. And yeah, went to hospital and yeah. That was a mad experience for me, all for my jury. And that was the bad side, I'm saying, of having the fame. And I guess also like glamorizing being a rapper, wearing jewelry. You know what I'm saying? So,
wow.
Yeah, that was a mad experience for me.
I mean, how do you deal with that after? So talking about like the month after, 3 months after, 6 months, are you paranoid? You're leaving your house? Are you, where are you at? Because I've been in a similar situation.
Yeah. Now that messed me up. For the rest of my life, up until now, I'm messed up from that situation. Because, you know, like I know people from the streets, but I've never been involved with it. I've always got along with people from the streets. You know, I've always had a good relationship. And if you know me, you know I'm not here to cause any harm to anyone. So when it happened to me, I was confused and everyone else was. Everyone was calling me. Why did they do this to you? You're the nicest people. Like, you're not here to hurt anyone. Mm-hmm. So it messed me up mentally because I'm confused. Like, why do people want to try and harm me? I haven't done nothing. And I didn't get into music to be stabbed. I should have just had a normal job. Maybe then it would have happened to me. Do you know what I mean?
And you're not really rapping about that stuff either.
Do you know what I'm saying? So I was messed up mentally. And then also I didn't know who did it. So the trust side of things really messed me up. And even where it made me not trust family members. And, you know, I was messed up, bro. Like even times when I would have a go at my mum saying, was you involved in this? And you know what I'm saying? Just not obviously my head was just all over
of
the
course.
Place. My mum would never do that, but I'm just,
of course.
I was so paranoid. I moved out my mum's house. I lived in a hotel in Mayfair for about a month, about 30 grand.
What,
for the
straight
month.
After it?
Straight after, because I didn't have a house.
You feel safer there.
Just feel safer there, there's security. So I stayed there for about a month and then bought an apartment outside of London. Had to move out of London straight away. Didn't want to see. I didn't go down my mum's road again for like a year, 2 years. And just, that was when I went quiet from music for about a year, 2 years. And then people were saying to you, where you going, man? You fell off. And meanwhile, I just got stabbed and I don't know who to trust. And how can I even make music when this is why I got stabbed for making music? Do you know what I mean? So I even had a point where I'm like, do I even want to do music anymore? Because I don't want to be famous. Do you know what I'm saying? So it was a big downfall for me, I think, personally, yeah.
No, it must have been tough, that. Did you ever speak to anyone to help you get over that?
No, never.
Not professional, not like counselling, therapy?
No. I've been told to, and even at the time, I think the hospital said, do you want to see a therapist or...
What about your mates? Did you speak to any of them about how you felt? Or at that time, you couldn't? You had to stay strong looking?
Yeah, I just moved out of London and kept it to myself, but I was very paranoid. Still till today, I'm very paranoid. If I go in a club, I'm still wary about where I am or who's around. And up until today, I think this is the PTSD part. When I'm in the dark, I still see people running towards me when the lights are off. And just little triggers I have, I probably can deal with professionally somehow. But
still creates a bit of anxiety. And stuff.
Yeah. And from there, I had depression, very anxious person. I was depressed for about 2-3 years just by myself living in Essex.
Wow.
Not seeing anyone. Didn't see my mum really. Went, you know, I just went quiet from everyone. And that was when I went quiet from music.
How do you overcome that though? What did you do anything or just time? Time healed it.
Time. I was still doing shows here and there. That helped. But I was just, do you know what helped me a lot? Just meeting my fiance. That changed everything when I met her.
Give you some purpose again.
Yeah, bro. And I lost all confidence. Do you know what I mean? At that time, I just felt like, do people even want me here for one? Because people are trying to kill me. And then I fell off as a musician because I haven't made music in 3 years. I'm not the top of the game. So I'm like, is there any point anymore? So I don't know. I just forgot who I was for time. Then when I met my fiance, she kind of reminded me who I was. And, you know, I remember at that time going to parties and like forgetting who I am, just thinking like, why am I even here? Do you know what I mean? Like just negative thoughts because of that whole period. And then she reminded me that when you walk into a room, have your head held high and remember who you are, what you've done. Do you know what I'm saying? And yeah, just built me back up, man. And just purpose, love. Also my mom as well. She helped me with everything. And my friends, my friendship circle, they helped out a lot. And then coming back to London helped out a lot as well. So yeah.
Love conquers all, doesn't it?
Bro.
In the end.
From there, man, like it's been up ever since, you know, meeting my fiance.
It's a very traumatic experience, that, mate.
Yeah, that's mad.
I was robbed probably a few years ago now at my home at knife point with guys with ballys on for a watch I had on my wrist.
Same as that, same thing.
They chased me around and pinned me, like caught me in a garden, a few of them. Yeah. And I thought, for a split second, you go into that sort of adrenaline ego mode where you're sort of thinking, fuck this, come on, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then in your head, I'm sort of thinking, all I remember myself was looking at the Bournemouth Daily Echo headline going like, nightclub owner stabbed over watch or dead or whatever. And I just thought, fuck this.
It's
insured. It's a bit of an item. So I just took it off and threw it. But that ruined me for 2 years. I was stuck in like a fight or flight mode.
Mm-hmm.
I was paranoid.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't understand who.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started questioning everyone around me. When people are asking me how I am or they've heard something, I'd be like, who'd you hear from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What'd you hear? Do you know what I mean? It really, really fucked with my head.
It's a big trigger point, yeah.
And then same as you. So, you know, anytime it was dark, I was seeing things and I went through the stage where I was always ready.
Yeah.
Like I lived for 2 years almost in my head going, right, next person that comes to the door, either me or them, are leaving the body bag.
Yeah.
Because I was just in this weird frame of mind.
100%, yeah, it leaves your mind mentally. Like, that's the thing, mentally.
Even today, still.
Yeah.
Still today. Like, I don't, I've got Garmin on and an activity tracker.
Yeah, you keep it.
I don't wear
any.
I only wear anything jewellery now if I'm at a family home or something. I don't wear it out anymore because it is rife.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really bad at the moment. I don't know if you've been hearing this.
100%, yeah. But my thing is even, it's some new jewellery I've got. This is like the first time I've wore jewelry properly in years.
I was going to actually ask you that. Yeah, what are you like now with it?
Certain places I'll wear. Yeah, obviously, now I know certain places to not wear it.
Yeah.
Also, I'm a bit older now, so I'm guessing that no one wants to try and rob me. I don't know. I don't want to be naive.
Be a bit wiser to it as well.
A bit wiser,
And that's what I felt a little bit. But the reason I said about the professional help, because that's what helped me.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
So what did you?
I went to see a therapist, effectively a lady. I went quite intense for a while. I went to see her every week for probably about 3 months. And then I went to monthly just to talk about it, basically, and try and get out of that fight or flight mode because it was affecting my life.
Yeah,
I couldn't. I was kind of like always charged up, ready to go, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not a very healthy place to live.
No.
And funnily enough, the mad thing about therapy is that she like roots everything back to your childhood. So some of the feelings I was feeling from that traumatic event is actually being triggered from my experiences when I was a kid.
Mad, yeah.
And I think the reason I said to you is it's definitely worth having a chat with someone because if you can understand it, you know, there's a thing in the military, they say knowledge dispels fear. The RAF use it.
Yeah.
So if you can understand something, the fear of it kind of goes a little bit.
100%, yeah. No, I agree. I need to do that. I've been looking into it. I need to. Now you said that, I'm going to make sure I do that.
It's worth it, man. Yeah, just for your own peace of mind. You know, you've got a fiance, your life's moving on. Not that it's, you know, I mean.
It's still always there, but I am 100% in a better place, but it's still there. 100%, yeah, I know that
it
is.
I don't think it will go ever.
When I pull up to my car park, which is like underground, whatever, but I still look behind me. Looking around the car park, who's here? Do you know what I'm saying? Still making sure I'm safe. So something's still there. I remember after that time, I would go to a booking at a club. My friends, I'll be with, you know, 10 friends, but I'd I'll say to them, what's it like in the club?
Yeah, yeah, before you go in.
Before I go in. And then, you know what I'm saying?
Did you change? Do you have different amounts of people around you then all of a sudden?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A bit more heavy.
Yeah, at that point, yeah.
Just in case.
Now I only roll with like one or two people. I've realised that the less the better probably anyway.
That whole music scene or television show business in general is a bit of a weird one, right? Yeah. Because you surround yourself with new people.
Mm.
You're with people that you think are tight with you, but they're actually not, because everyone wants something because you're a somebody.
Yeah.
And it takes sometimes an experience like that to rebuckle down your circle and trying to think, right, what do I want from life? What do I value? And who do I value? Who's been there with me? Who's not been there with me?
100%.
It's so important. Yeah.
Now, I learned a lot from that situation. So it was a bad thing that happened, but loads of good came out of it. You know, learning, like you said, them kind of morals, meeting my fiance, life lessons, who I can trust, cutting down my circle, things that I learned a lot from. And thankfully, I wasn't harmed too badly. I survived. You know, some people, you know, God forbid, don't even survive a stabbing. Yeah. So I'm very grateful in that sense. But yeah, I learned a lot, man. And then after that, I had to build back up. Meeting my fiance helped a lot. Getting back in the studio, I didn't go to the studio for years. So, you know, like, I meet people today and they're like, oh, I want it, man. Between 2010-13, you fell off, man. You weren't doing nothing. I'm like, bro, like, I was a superstar from 2008 to 2011. Like, I had to have a few years just to get my life in check. I had life issues going on, real life issues. So, people think you can just carry on. Like, nothing lasts forever. So,
well, they forget when you meet your heroes or even like your teachers at school, you forget they're humans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You forget that police officer's a human or that so-and-so is like a normal human.
Normal
feelings.
Person.
Yeah, 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 and a family and a life they have to run.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah, it's mad. What's the future hold for you? What you got planned?
I've been building back up my brand a bit more in a different direction, more the DJ direction and producing. This summer we've done a lot of DJ gigs. We've done Ibiza Rocks with Nathan Dawe.
Yeah, nice.
Done Aya Napa Rocks. We've been doing Magaluf, all the Summer Islands festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So just building up the brand as a DJ a bit more, because that was the first thing I fell in love with. So to be back in
that. You still enjoy that?
I love it, man. Yes. That was my first passion and love, and I still love doing that. Being in the clubs is like the best feeling in the world. So doing that and producing again, I've got a tune with Backroad G coming, Chip, Wiley, I've done some new production for. Just producing again for all my favourite artists, man, and just enjoying it.
They're all coming back on the scene
as
well.
Yeah, man, all my favourites. You know what, my dream is to do a project, which I'm trying to work on at the moment, bringing back some of the OGs, the Chips, the Skeptors or whoever, and mixing them with the new school and bridging that gap between the two, because I feel like drill and grime is kind of similar, you know what I mean? Same tempo. So bringing them together on one project is my dream. And back to enjoying what I'm doing, man. And, you know, I'm back mentally where I need to be, getting married and living life.
Game over that.
I'm at the game, ladies.
Sorry, ladies. You've lost the chance. We'll have to try and get you booked at Sandfest or get you down.
2023. Let's do it.
Next summer.
100%.
If there's one bit of advice, I'll finish on this, that you'd give your younger self now.
Yeah. One bit of advice.
What would it be?
For me, that's a good question.
You sat here now,
this
ironic, to speak to, let's say, 15, 16, 18-year-old ironic.
Yeah.
Or DJ ironic, as you were known then.
Yeah. I'll give two bits of it. One, I'll say be confident, because I never knew how to be confident at that age. I was always very quiet and shy, and I didn't know what I bring to the table, when I should believe in myself a bit more at that point. Believe in yourself, be confident.
Know your self-worth.
Know your self-worth. And then secondly, never stop, keep going. I feel like the minute you stop going is when you don't realize your potential. Do you know what I'm saying? Whereas when you keep going, you never know what's next and what's around the corner. So just keep going, man.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Bro, thank you so much for coming on.
Come
it's
on,
been
bro.
A pleasure.
Appreciate you,
been
man.
A pleasure.
Thanks
chatting.
For having me.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Please remember to subscribe on your favorite platform and follow the journey on social media.